We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land where this podcast episode was produced. SBS Italian pays our respects to the Cammeraygal people of the Gurungay Nation and their elders, past and present. We also acknowledge the traditional owners from all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands you're listening from today. Italian cuisine is one of Australia's favourites, and there's no doubt Italian cuisine is a celebrity in the world of food. But there are many dishes, weird and wonderful specialities that don't make it beyond the Italian border. And today let's have a sandwich, a beautiful panino with some beautiful chunks of spleen, lungs and windpipe. My name is Massimiliano Gugole, and in this SBS Italian podcast series, I'll tell you the story of ugly dishes that tell us something new about Italian cuisine and the love that Italians have for food. Palermo, capital of Sicily, is a street food paradise. Snacks, even substantial ones, are cooked, purchased and consumed in the street. Among these, there's a sandwich that may appear unappetizing, containing parts of the animal that you may have never thought to eat. A panino that people from Palermo can't imagine life without.
It looks very, very meaty. Scary meaty.
The meat looks weird.
I just identified a little arterial nodule.
That's scary.
Oh, no, I'm out. Not for me.
I would probably give it a try. I don't know if I would eat the whole thing.
And it's grey with fat, so no. No, thank you, though.
I love Sicily, but I will have to look for some other specialties.
Pane camigliosa in Sicilian means bread with spleen. And this street food has been around for centuries in Palermo. Having it is part of any visit to the city. Also for Australian journalist, food lover and traveller, Sophia Levin, who'll tell us all about it. Hi, Sophia.
Buongiorno.
Ciao. Sophia, so let's dive right in. What was your first impression when you saw the first vendor of pane camigliosa in Palermo?
Well, it's funny because it wasn't my first pane camigliosa.
Right.
The first time I had it, strangely enough, was in my home city of Melbourne.
Okay.
And that's because in 2020, I was due to go to Sicily on a vacation. And of course, you know, COVID happened and trips were cancelled. But off the back of that, I contacted a friend who is also a chef, who is Sicilian born. His name's Sergio Varghetto. And I just said, I've been researching Sicily. I was so excited to go and eat the street food in Palermo in particular. Will you please help me visit at least in taste? So he actually put together these street food sandwiches. And I said, well, you know, why don't we bring them to the people? So he actually put them on his menu, which I thought was brave, given that not everybody likes to eat offal in Melbourne, and they were a bit of a hit. So that was the first time I had it before actually visiting Sicily for the first time, which was this year.
So Melbourne first and then Palermo.
Yeah, very strange, hey?
Well, it happens. And we'll give the recipe a little bit later, but tell us first, the name obviously gives it away. It's bread and spleen, but there's also other ingredients in it.
Yeah, I think the major one is lard, just pure fat. And I think it's usually veal spleen as well, as I understand it, but there might be a little bit of lung in there, some other bits and pieces. And it's the classic story of offal, where a poor community, in this case, the Jews who were in Sicily, thousands of years ago, they just made do with the offcuts. And if you fry anything in lard for long enough, it's going to be delicious.
That's what they say. What does it look like?
Sloppy. It looks really sloppy. The one I made with Joe was boiling in a big pot. And then when I was actually in Palermo, in Sicily, there were these huge, huge vats of fat. In particular, you'd see them sort of behind a little bit of glass. Maybe that was on a cart or in a shop, I imagine, so that you don't get boiling hot lard spluttering all over you. And then it's all the spleen and the guts and whatever else might be in there, but usually spleen just in it, poaching slowly.
Tell us about the smell.
Strong. It's quite a challenging smell. I think the better that people clean offal, the less likely it is to smell. But if anyone's ever eaten anything to do with liver in particular, and you know, that's pâté, for example, which people don't freak out about nearly as much, maybe because it's French and, you know, we have this understanding of French food as being luxurious and fancy, and then everything else people turn their noses up at, which is kind of ridiculous. But everyone knows what pâté looks like. And if you've ever stuck your nose in a jar of pâté, it's a strong smell. It's just what happens with offal.
And so let's go straight to Palermo now. What was your impression there? Is this tradition still alive?
Oh, yeah, it's alive and well. And it's just such a food city. I think it's one of the best places for street food that I've ever been in my entire life. I mean, the markets are just overrun with different food. People are grilling all different things. They're shouting, they're eating, you know, they're drinking beers at odd hours of the day, standing up, just shoving their mouths full of food from carts. And I loved it. I was just obsessed with it. And this pane camusa was just one of many sandwiches that I saw in the markets and in focaccerias and different shops. And there were other things with different bits of the animal in them as well. But put it between bread and all of a sudden you can transport it really easily and it's less messy. So it's genius.
There's something incredibly fascinating about sandwiches. The magic of filling the empty space between two slices of bread with literally almost anything. Barry Enderwick explores these infinite possibilities in an incredibly popular TikTok profile called Sandwiches of History.
It cuts across cuisines and cultures, and you can put anything between two slices of bread, and even the bread itself can have a wide variety of options. So it's just this infinite possibility of textures, of flavors, of cuisines that you can put together, and it's portable. I love them.
When did you start liking them, and when did you start thinking about, oh, this could be the chance to narrate a story or to tell something, so to start your TikTok page and your Instagram and so on?
I've always loved sandwiches, even as a kid growing up, but a friend of mine sent me a PDF of this book called The Up-to-Date Sandwich Book of 1909. I thought it would be interesting to try these sandwiches that were in 1909 considered the creme de la creme, like the best sandwiches. They put them in a book and see what they were like. And if, you know, there's something that I would like now, or could I maybe add some stuff to it? And it just sort of went from there, curiosity. And now I've expanded to about 60 books that I either physically own, have access to, or people have sent pictures of to me.
All of your videos are quite popular, but some become incredibly popular. What makes a particular sandwich more popular than another one, do you think? Is it chance?
Yeah, there's no secret formula, but I have noticed that sandwiches that are either really gross sounding or looking, or sandwiches that are ridiculously delicious. And my reaction kind of is a good cue as to whether or not something is ridiculously delicious or absurdly terrible. The ones that are seem to be on the other ends of the spectrum there are the ones that seem to get the most reaction, shares, comments, likes. Yeah.
So for someone who hasn't seen your videos, you make a sandwich and you say what you think about it. Have you ever thought why people watch it? I mean, what's the connection? What do they expect from your videos?
At first I was kind of puzzled, and then I've had a lot of people writing to me over the last year and a half. They'll send in notes, and it ranges everything from just a calm moment in the day to something that's wholesome that they can watch on social media amidst everyone, you know, doing their dancing and things like that. And then some folks just, I don't know, they relate to me being in my kitchen and just making food.
You were saying that the successful ones are the disgusting ones and the delicious ones. Can you give us one of each?
Sure. I made one today, minced chicken sandwich from 1001 Sandwiches in 1936. And that one was tasty. It was minced chicken, hard-boiled egg, mustard, mayonnaise. It was actually quite good. It was surprisingly good. One that was terrible would be the bran sandwich. And I forget which cookbook that was, but basically you have to cook bran with an egg, and it was just bland. It felt like I was eating cardboard, and it was just terrible. I just ended up throwing it in the trash, which I hate doing, but there's no way I was going to be able to plus that up.
Is there any sandwich you dream of, anything you haven't tried yet and you would like to try, or any curiosity, anything for the future?
You know, there's no sandwich that I dream of that I haven't tried. Old. I did do one recently from a recipe book from a restaurant in New Orleans called Turkey and the Wolf, and it's called The Tomato. And it was infinitely better than it should have been. It sounded good, but I made it, and I cannot wait to make that again this summer when the tomatoes are ripe.
What was it like?
Thick bread, way too much mayonnaise, thick heirloom tomatoes, salt and pepper, roasted sunflower seeds, lots of dill and lots of basil. And I believe the bread was toasted. It was just fantastic. And I cannot wait to make that again.
As a conclusion, I'll give you the ingredients of the sandwich, or as we call them in Italian cuisine, panini, that we're discussing today. Mm-hmm. And tell me what you think about it. So basically, it's veal spleen, lungs, and windpipe together with ricotta cheese. What would you make of that?
I'm not a fan of offal or organ meats or anything like that. It kind of weirds me out. But on the other hand, I have to say, using every part of the animal is an excellent idea and very laudable. I might have to have a beer or two before I take a bite of that.
I'm Sophia Levin, and today I'm going to take you to Palermo in Sicily to try a very special sandwich, pane camusa.
I'm from a different part of Italy, but I was told that people eat them even very early in the morning, say 4 or 5 a.m. Doesn't matter. It's still good.
Yeah. So I saw a lot of people eating them first thing, sort of, you know, Saturday morning breakfast, that kind of vibe. But
it's the equivalent to our brunch.
It's an equivalent to our brunch, but I don't know how late these places open or how early they open, but I think it would make the best hangover food. Or even, you know, after a night out, if you could find one of these at 4 or 5 a.m., I think it would just soak everything up, line the stomach with some spleen, and then you'd be ready to go for the day.
Did you go for seconds?
No, and only because it is so rich and so filling. The thing is dripping when you sort of hold it up to your mouth and take a bite. You get the lard and the oil sort of running down your wrists, and that's probably the sign of a good one, I'd say.
So that gives us also the opportunity of reminding our listeners, our English-speaking listeners, that if it's one, it's panino, not panini. That's something that really bothers Italians sometimes. So just un panino, not due panini for you, Sophia. Now, would you ever think of cooking this at home?
I think if I had a group of people who were keen to try it, definitely. Because of the sort of way that it's done, it's really not the sort of thing you'd make for just for yourself for lunch, because it is a little bit time consuming, just the way that you prepare offal and fry anything like this. You just need to let it rest and soak and bubble away. So if you've got a group who are willing to try it, then absolutely make it at home.
Did you hear many stories about it when you were in Palermo? Did people share memories or other things that were linked to this particular dish?
It was interesting because I was traveling with a group, and my guide who was there, he's from Rome. So lots of offal in Rome, but this sandwich is very specific to the area. So everyone I was with was coming to try it either for the first time or coming back to have it because they were in Palermo. I think the main story that I heard about eating it was from Joe, who grew up not really liking it
really?
At all and sort of being forced to eat it just as a child. And so the last time he had had one before we made one together in Melbourne, he was about 7 years old. So he was
oh,
a little
really?
Bit nervous
that's
trying
large
it again. Yeah. But he enjoyed it, which is a good thing because he's a chef and he made it. So that's a good sign.
Well, then must be good. So in case someone does want to give it a go, shall we give the recipe?
Yeah. Joe has Mr. Bianco, which is a restaurant in Melbourne, which is where we made it together. I was the, I cut a few pieces up. I helped out, but I was mostly cheerleading. But so he's got a recipe here that he says served six people. It includes 2 kilograms of veal spleen. He's got 6 soft white rolls. And, you know, I think the cheaper the roll, the better in this case. This does not have to be fancy bread. It's just purely to mop up all the fat and the goodness. When I was eating it, there were occasions where I used the bread quite literally as a napkin because there wasn't any around. I had a bit left. I was wiping my ribs with it. When he made it, he did it with ricotta. Over there, they did, and you're going to have to let me know how I go on my pronunciation here, but is it caciocavallo?
Great.
Oh, there we go, which is, you know, the teardropped cheese that's sort of semi-firm. And that's what I saw mostly when I was in Sicily. Lemon, of course, just 2 lemons because you squeeze it over the top and you cut through a bit of the fat, and 1 kilogram of lard. The lard looks so good. I remember being there in Palermo at one of these classical places that's been there for a long time. And someone just walks over to the big vat that's bubbling away with it looked like an ice cream tub and a spoon, and just big, big spoonfuls, ladlefuls of this firm white stuff. But what is that? And it was the lard. They just throw it in and it melts down because over time it soaks, which I think is so interesting.
It's not a very common ingredient here anymore, is it?
No, no. I think everybody's really, really conscious about weight and fat and this and that. But, you know, it's really natural. It's, you know, everything in moderation, definitely. And it's completely unprocessed, all of this. So, I mean, I'm not going to go so far as to say it's healthy, but, but it is a treat and it's a natural one too. So the first step before making all of this, you need to prepare the veal spleen. And the way to do that is the day before, according to Joe, just to put it in water, in salted water for 45 minutes, and then let it rest in the fridge, of course. And I think this helps to sort of prepare it the next day. So step two, next day, take it out of the fridge, slice it really, really thinly. I guess it depends how you want to do it. You can get a bit more of the texture and the flavor that way, and you can pile it up quite high. And then it's just a matter of sort of slow and low over the heat. So lard in the pan with the spleen slices, and then once the lard is boiling, and then just slowly frying it for about 20 minutes. Season it as you like, just salt and pepper will do the trick. And this is sort of a slightly less intense way of doing it than boiling it in, you know, completely covered in lard like they do on the streets over there. So then you want to take the spleen out of the pot with a slotted spoon or a fork, something just to let some of that melted lard drip off. Or you can chuck it all in, it's up to you really. That's it, you put it in the bread, put the cheese over the top. And Joe says that you have to, I don't know why, maybe this is just what he did growing up, you have to squish it all together, like you have to push it down, maybe so some of that lard soaks into the bread and all of those flavors. But it is just like a beautiful, delicious mess. And there's something, it's rich, it's sort of greasy, you've got the textures from the spleen and from the soft roll. But then there's also something really great about the temperature contrast. So you've had meat boiling in fat, which is hot. And then with the ricotta, if you choose to use ricotta, it's really cool and refreshing. So it's a bit of electricity in your mouth as you take that first bite. And it's very Moorish. You'll find you go back again and again.
And I think in Palermo, they offer you the option. You can have it with cheese or without the cheese, which, funnily enough, they call simple or single if you don't want it, just with the lemon, or with the cheese is married. So the sandwich gets married to the cheese. That's romantic, isn't it?
So I recommend the romance. I would definitely go for the cheese. More is more sometimes.
I imagine most of the people who are listening have never tasted spleen. What's that like?
What does it taste like? I mean, it's rich and it's sort of, it's not fatty, right? So I think when people are eating the muscle of an animal, which sounds freaky, but that's what a steak is, you know, depending on which part of the body that is, it might be, you know, a bit gristly or a bit fatty, but because it's an organ, it's really lean. So it's quite soft. It's a strong flavor. It's similar to liver, maybe not quite as strong, I would say, but it is that smell. So getting over what it is in your head is really important, but it's no different from eating any other part of an animal. And it's really good for sustainability. You know, we talk about nose to tail dining, like it's a trendy thing in a restaurant, but people have been doing this for thousands of years out of necessity. And now we have access to animals that are well raised and meat that's been treated properly and culled properly. And so you can really taste the difference when you have a good quality product. And if you ask a good butcher for that, they should be able to get it to you or at least direct you to somewhere that has it.
Tell us a bit more now about the food street scene in Palermo.
Oh, it's so good. It's wild. I think there are three main markets as I remember them, but you can smell them and hear them before you even get there. You'll be right around the corner. And you sort of think about where it's based. So there's lots of different meats and vegetables sort of frying away on little barbecues. But something that I really enjoyed that I found just stumbled across completely coincidentally on my last day was the seafood. So there was this one lady in particular selling sea urchin or uni just from a stall. And it was exciting for everybody. There were locals walking past who were doing a double take and stopping. So she was just cracking open oysters and sea urchin, which I imagine came fresh off a boat that morning, cracking them open and just serving them to people with a spoon and just this bright orange color. And everybody sort of looking at, is it Ricci? Is that right?
That's correct. In fact, one of the other dishes we covered during this podcast is ricci.
I was dead set on finding it whenever I saw it in any kind of pasta, I'd order it. And that's just such a cool thing to have because I've only really come across it in quite high-end Japanese restaurants before, in Australia at least. So that was a real treat.
Pane Kamigiosa, that's a name that's hard for me to pronounce, as it comes from a place very far from my hometown. It's in a Sicilian dialect, and even in Sicily there might be a variation or two on how you say it. It means bread with spleen. Another couple of words you might need if you're ever in Palermo and want to try this sandwich are schietta and maritata. If you're a purist, you'll want to try it schietta, or single, unmarried. The meat is only complemented with a squeeze of lemon. Otherwise, you may celebrate holy matrimony between spleen and cheese and go for maritata, meaning married. That has nothing to do with your views on marriage, more on your ability to digest lactose and your craving for luscious food. This version of the panino will have ricotta, caciocavallo, or another beautiful Italian cheese. If you are ever in Sicily's capital, Palermo, make sure you devote some time to sampling these highlights of the city's street food culture, one of the best in the world. We would need a whole series to list all of the other wonderful specialties you can try. Cheap and always fresh, in Palermo you can get the best arancine for less than $3. Or, if you feel more adventurous, try stigiole, lamb or veal intestines, often grilled with onions. And for the vegans among us, but not only them, don't go past pane panelle. It's a sensational sandwich with a chickpea flour fritter inside. Exploring the markets and enjoying these fabulous foods while standing on the footpath is one of the greatest joys of any visit to Palermo. Why do you think there is such a strong tradition of specialties in Palermo that are tasted on the street?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure I have the answer, but I feel like this is something that's all across Italy, just that connection to food is, it just runs so deep. It's in the DNA. In Sicily in particular, and therefore Palermo, the history is so varied. There's such an interesting overlay of different cultures from, you know, hundreds and in some cases thousands of years. Everybody's been through the country and left their mark when they've taken over or conquered it or, you know, been on the other end of that. So you've got this beautiful produce that's readily available from surrounding areas. You've got the volcanic soils as well, which mean it grows incredibly. And I mean, in Sicily, you know, and Mount Etna, it's known for its wines. And then you've got spices that you might not find in other parts, just because it's so strongly tied to its history.
So it's cheese, it's offal, it's bread. Do you think that Pane Kamigiosa will survive this era in which we're all invited to eat more fruit, light snacks, nuts?
I would say if it's been around for 1,000 years, it's probably going to last a long, long time.
Thank you so much to Sophia Levin for taking us to Palermo through Melbourne and taste this very, very unusual panino. Thanks, Sophia.
Thank you so much.
In our next episode, we'll feature a fritto misto, not the usual seafood-based type of fried food. There's a region in northern Italy where the misto, the mix, is brought to a different level with meat, fruit, biscuits, a lot of ingredients, all together, all fried. This episode was hosted and produced by me, Massimiliano Gugole, with support from the executive producer of SBS Italian, Magica Fossati, as well as Max Gosford, Joel Supple and Caroline Gates. A big thank you to the SBS Food team for their support as well. For more SBS Italian content, go to sbs.com.au/Italian, or to find more SBS podcasts in English, go to sbs.com.au/audio.